Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. Eric Steven is here. You know what I call second place?
First for losers?
First loser. That's right. What a bunch of bums. No, yeah. We'll go into this after our first break just coming up here. But yeah, weird week in that, like, not the result the Dodgers have been really seeking all year, but and two monstrous injuries, and still it kind of felt good.
There were
some exciting wins.
It was the opposite of the previous few weeks, right? They're red hot, but they can't catch the Giants. So everyone's going like, what's wrong with the Dodgers? And then like this week they didn't catch the Giants, but it's like, hey, these guys are pretty good. Yeah. Like, I don't know. It was weird. But
we'll go into those injuries. We'll dissect everything that happened the past week. We'll look ahead to the Cards. We don't have a Dodgers rewind because there's too much to talk about. We do have questions from Craig because we can't say no to that. All of that after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So the Dodgers finish one game back. They win 106 games, and they get to play a one-card playoff.
Yeah. It's actually, I think, going to be a 26 card playoff because they're playing the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. Weird year. 106 wins is it's the best. It's the most wins by a defending World Series champion ever. Now there were some in the 154 game schedule. I think it was six Yankees teams and then like three old Philadelphia A's teams. 10 total teams that had a better winning percentage than these Dodgers. But like since I think the last one that was better was the 1954 Yankees. And they also finished in second place because the Indians that year were won 111 games. So like, but then that was also only one playoff team per league. And this year, you know, there's five playoff teams per league. The Dodgers have the second best record in all of baseball. And like you said, it's a one game playoff. It is what it is. Like, I will say this. We talked about it before our little mini break there. I know, like the second, I don't know, since the All-Star break, it seems like, the Dodgers have had a great year, right? Like, it just is what it is. They won 106 games. It's hard to say, like, hey, that what's wrong with that team? But, like, because the Giants, like, just kept winning, the Dodgers, like, season is viewed through this really negative lens, it seems like. But it was funny. I think Bill Plaschke was the one who asked this. I think this was Saturday. And he asked Dave Roberts, I think at the time this was, oh yeah, so can 104 win season be considered a disappointment? And Dave Roberts like explained, look, obviously winning the World Series is our goal, you know, whether we, by the way, this was at the time the Giants were still playing and the Dodgers were down two with two to play. So it didn't seem like Sunday was even going to matter at that point. But, you know, Roberts was like, look, whether we win the division or not, like, you can't view it as a disappointment because of, like, all the work that people put in. It just totally disrespects that. And then Roberts kind of went a little bit further than I expected him to. But he said, yeah, people who share that view are clueless. And I was like, oh, yeah, Dave, go. Like, this was fun. And, yeah, and then they just, and they ended up, they just kept winning all weekend, but despite, like, very key players suffering really bad injuries. Like, it was not a good weekend. If there's anything to be, like, a super bummer about, it's the injuries to Clayton Kershaw and Max Muncy, which were suffered Friday and Sunday. I guess Kershaw, you know, it's been sort of coming for a while, I would imagine, but it just sort of gave out Friday. But yeah, so I guess I'll ask you this. What were you watching Friday live when Kershaw, like, exited the game?
I was not. We had a little family illness running through the corner. So my weekend, I did watch most of Sunday until it was clear the Giants were going to win, and I was just upset at baseball at that point. So
sure.
And I watched all of the gazillion home run game on Thursday. Is that right?
Thursday?
Again, yeah, this week has blurred.
Yeah, exactly. it's hard to keep track.
The 1+4 game, as it were.
Yes.
So yeah, I watched most of the baseball, but it all blurs in which game was what. But the Kershaw game, I definitely was sleeping, taking care of a kid, doing something.
Yeah. The one I was saying, the 1+4 game was actually Wednesday. But like
sure.
Right.
And it's like one of those, like, guess I believe you.
Like, days of the week are always jumbled together during the baseball season, but like especially so recently. It's so on Friday, you know, Clayton Kershaw, he missed it was about 2.5 months, maybe a little less than that, it's always like weird how they word things. When they put him on the injured list in July, it was left forearm inflammation, but like, it's all like connected to the elbow. And like Kershaw mentioned, like, you know, my elbow is sore. He talked about elbow. The doctor's like, no, it's forearm thing. Cause I think, you know, you don't want to say elbow. Nobody ever wants to say elbow injury out loud because it always means bad things, but it's not like it makes it any better. It's very clearly elbow related. And his rehab for that during those over two months was shut down because of soreness in the elbow. He finally came back. He looked pretty good, I would say, the first two starts back. He had the second start was in Cincinnati, where he had like 20 swinging strikes in 5 innings. I think he struck out 8 that day. But he was like looking good. You're like, okay, wow, this is like maybe a little bit better than I expected, a little quicker than I expected. And then, you know, knowing he was going to still like have time to build back up a little bit for the postseason. We even talked about this, wondering, like, because you know, obviously the Dodgers' top three starters when he came back were Scherzer, Buehler, Urias, and are they really going to go with like Kershaw as the fourth starter? And I was like skeptical that they would. And I think I was right in that, because after on Friday night, or maybe it was, I can't remember if this was after the game Friday or maybe it was Saturday when Dave Roberts talked about this, but he said the Kershaw injury, which I'll get to in a second, that basically locked in Julio Urias as a starter. And like, cause they were considering doing like the same sort of thing that they did last year with him. Now you still need 4 starters in the postseason, but I think maybe in the division series you could, had they won the division and didn't have to like use, you know, a starter in the wild card game to sort of mess with the schedule. At times I think they might've considered using Urias in like that super relief role in addition to starting, kind of like what they did last postseason. But now with Kershaw, he's very clearly one of the 3 starters, and then figuring out what's left after that if they advance past the wild card game. But yeah, so Kershaw had a rough start at Coors, but it was also Coors. Like, I don't think anyone thought anything of that start, thinking, it was like a warning sign or anything. It's just, it was just kind of Coors. But then Friday night, he was kind of just laboring, just generally. I think he allowed like 5 of the 10 batters he faced to reach with a hit. And there were a couple times the last batter he faced was Colton Wong, and like Kershaw was wincing during the delivery. I think it was Dave Roberts like 2 or 3 times. And then I was looking at a couple replays of that. And yeah, he looked absolutely gassed on the mound, like just trying everything to, you know, to sort of make this work. And then they after he gave up a double to Wong, and they're down. I think it was 3-1 or 3-0 at the time. I don't remember. Trainer comes out. Dave Roberts comes out. They talk to him. And then all of a sudden, Kershaw's walking off the mound, and it made it weird because everyone was like shocked or just like a super bummer. Like, this is bad, right? This is obviously going to be bad. But Kershaw was like holding the ball as he walked off, and like I think people like latched on to that because he's going to be a free agent after this year, and just like there's at least the technical possibility that he could not be a Dodger after this year. And I think people saw him like taking the ball off the mound thinking, oh crap, like they're Kershaw's like done as a Dodger. And I think I tweeted something about this, but like just generally, like I think it's a long way to assume that I think Kershaw is much more likely to be a Dodger going forward than not. But and there's everyone sort of likes to bring up a possibility of him like pitching for the Rangers because it's his hometown team. He had an interview in the offseason with Jorge Castillo of the Times talking about how, you know, it's going to be a tough decision with his kids wanting them to be like in school at home in Texas, because, you know, during the season they sort of have traveled with Kershaw in Los Angeles and wherever. So that really is not going to be able to happen going forward. But also, like, he sort of hinted in the Castillo piece back in like February that, you know, he wasn't entirely sure that he was going to keep pitching. So like retirement was like floated at least in the piece. But I would say Kershaw, like at least getting out ahead of this or after it was out, like in spring training, he's like, no, I very clearly want to still pitch. Like, and so I think people latched onto that. I know Andy McCullough wrote a very good piece at The Athletic sort of alluding to the, you know, wanting to be like home, and if, you know, whether he's done or not, it was more open-ended. But it's one of those things. I don't think he's going to pitch for the Rangers. Like, he's not going to go pitch for a bad team, right? But I think that was sort of on my mind on Friday. But like, I think the main thing is we're recording this on Monday. He's supposed to have like further testing today. Like, there's a very good chance Kershaw's not even pitching next year, because depending on the injury, like it could be like if it's Tommy John, he's definitely not pitching next year. But no one really knows exactly what the extent is, but everyone assumes it's bad. Now, you know, even on Friday, did you end up seeing any of the like post game interview with Kershaw?
I didn't see any of it, but I was following along with Twitter.
Yeah, he was as bummed as I've seen him. Like, it wasn't as bad as after the 2019 division series when he mm-hmm. gave up the 2 home runs in relief. He was so despondent, like, after that. This one, he was like, you know, I think Kershaw, obviously they won a World Series last year, so that's part of it. But, like, he was so focused on getting back to be able to contribute in the postseason that he tried to come back, and until I couldn't do it anymore. And everyone, like, they were very careful to say, like, we don't know exactly how long he's going to be out, but I think he knew, Dave Roberts knew, but said less about it. that Kershaw is like not definitely not pitching this postseason. He's like, it's going to be awfully hard to contribute. That's what Kershaw said, and I think it's like that's a kind way to put it, but he's like very clearly not going to be pitching for a while, and so it was a huge, huge bummer because it's Kershaw, right? He's like the franchise, and like, you know, that sucks. But so that sort of cast a pall over the entire weekend, I guess. Like, you know, they're obviously trying to go into the playoffs on a high note. And it was just like, man, that was such a bummer. But yeah, so they're very likely not going to have Kershaw for the entire postseason. I'm sure we'll find out more within a day or two. But yeah, that was a huge bummer.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remind myself of what baseball I did watch just because of how blurred that week was. But I can tell you, well, I figured that out. I did not see the Kershaw injury. Boy, did I see the Muncy injury.
Oh, God, yeah. And so that was, I'm not sure exactly what, it wasn't a thing where you could obviously hear it in the press box, and I don't remember if I had headphones on at the time. This was like the third inning on Sunday. It was a little number in front of the plate, Jace Peterson, who over the years, back when Jock was a Dodger, I have to remind myself, is not Jock Peterson, even though his name almost is that. He, little tapper in front of the plate, Will Smith fielded it, threw to first. It was the classic, the throw kind of drifted towards the first baseline right as Peterson is at first. So Muncy, who's a right-handed thrower, reaches over with his left hand to try to catch it right at the point where Peterson's coming. And Peterson, you know, he's just run to the bag, kind of runs right through it. And, you know, it's at that point where your elbow is like just very much exposed and you're like reaching this one way and then someone like hits it the other way. I mean, it was one of those things where you figure at the very least it's hyperextension. We still don't know the full extent of Muncy. But he like flew, like sort of twisted immediately. The glove flew off, like in a twisty way, like a little bit up the first base line in between first and second. The ball trickled away. So Peterson was safe, but like Muncy immediately crumpled to the ground. I think he screamed because, or at least like I was looking at the replay. It was very clear that it hurt a lot. And he was like writhing on the ground for a while. He did walk off under his own power, but he was like very, very gingerly holding his left arm. The Dodgers' official diagnosis yesterday was left elbow injury. After the game, there wasn't much clarity. Dave Roberts said the results were still I forgot the exact term he used, but it's just unknown right now. They did x-rays. They did some further scans. That usually happens if there's like, if there's so much swelling that you can't really see much yet. So I think they're going to do more today and on Monday and figure it out. But so at the very least, Muncy is almost certainly out for the wild card game Wednesday. And we'll talk about that in a little bit, but, it sounds like he's going to be out for a lot longer than that because, you know, depending on what the injury was. But Roberts made it sound like division series, highly unlikely if the Dodgers advance. But he was saying, like, look, I don't want to count Max out, but we're just sort of waiting and seeing. But it sounds like there's a very, like, real chance that Max Muncy does not play in the postseason, even if the Dodgers last through the World Series. Again, we don't know the extent yet, but that was sort of the tone of post game on Sunday. So yeah, and obviously those are two of the biggest like contributors for the Dodgers. Kershaw was very clearly one of their four postseason starters. Muncy is a guy who, you know, hits anywhere, who at times has hit anywhere between like second and sixth in the Dodgers lineup, but a very key component. He led the team in home runs. So it's a real bummer. They're going to be very likely be without both for at least a while, if not the entire postseason. So yeah, it's a huge bummer.
Rereading these recaps of the games this week, and I watched. Yeah, I remember watching most of this, all of this, except for Friday, and yet this is all one big game. But a common thread through most of the games is, and we hinted at this earlier, Dodgers offense is, this is what we were told we would get.
Yep. That was, I think, a lot of the tone of the Dodgers, you know, coming into the last week, that the idea they could be like disappointing in a way was sort of tied to the fact that like they were still like leading the league or leading the National League in runs scored. But it was like given the players available, and we've talked about this where full strength is a myth, at least it has been elusive, where they don't always have their eight best available, but they can field the lineup with, you know, I think entering, I didn't look at the exact final numbers, but entering Sunday, I believe seven of the starters on Sunday, this includes Muncy, had a WRC plus of, Justin Turner was 128. He was the lowest among those top seven. Everyone else was in the 130s and 140s. Which is absurd to have that many players. And then, like, Chris Taylor was in that territory for much of the year, slumped badly in the second half, but he's still at like 112 or something like that. And he was the eighth place hitter yesterday. So, like, that is an awesome lineup, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and this last week, they played like it. And so it got to the point where, the reason why you thought the 1+4 game was Thursday instead of Wednesday is because they just, every game was like that. They just kept hitting home runs. Like, I think it's right after the 1+4 game, they hit six home runs that night. They hit five home runs the next night. So it was like, they just kept hitting home runs. And then they did also other stuff like besides the home runs, which was always a thing that was sort of plaguing them at least in the second half. Cause like even after like Trey Turner had joined, the Dodgers were averaging fewer runs per game than they did like before the All-Star break. But then like this last week, they almost scored eight a game. It was crazy. I believe in the last five games of the season, they scored eight or more in every game. That's the longest, tied for the longest streak in franchise history. They've done it three other times, once in LA recently and then twice in Brooklyn. So this is as good. We've talked about this, like the pitching carried the Dodgers this year, like just all year. There were different times it was heavily starting pitching for the first like 4 months and then, or 3 months, I guess. And then as, you know, pitchers got hurt, it was the bullpen and like just an every, like a Johnny Holstaff thing for a while. But like everyone was pitching incredibly well, carrying them even when the offense was struggling. But like this last week, it was the offense. And like we talked about this, like, so at some point that they're good enough to hit their way through stuff. And like, you know, and that's what really happened, like the last, especially in the last week. And like, it's one of those where it doesn't, how you play in September doesn't always mean like what you're going to do in October. They still have to play well, but the fact that they have the personnel to do that and the fact that they showed it finally is at least something to like hold your hat on, I think, going into October. So yeah, that's the offense looked very, very, very good. Well, especially so Trey Turner has just been on fire. Like he ended up, I think he ended the season on a 19 game hitting streak. he clinched the batting title. The first, I'm contractually obligated to say this, the first Dodger to lead the major leagues in batting average since Eddie Murray in 1890. Eddie Murray did not win a batting title because he was robbed. But Turner, I was surprised by this. I didn't realize it until Sunday. He led the National League in total bases, Trey Turner. He led the National League in stolen bases. He led the National League in hits. He led the National League in Fangraphs WAR. So a very, like, he's like the, all the MVP conversation is sort of centered around like Bryce Harper versus Juan Soto, with like a dash of Fernando Tatis. But I think the Padres collapse hurts them greatly there, even mm-hmm. though even if Tatis is deserving, but he also didn't play very well down the stretch. But like Turner, man, has as good of an argument as anyone. I don't necessarily think he's going to win like MVP, but he's just about as deserving as any of the candidates. And like he was excellent. But the other thing is Corey Seager is, I believe Dave Roberts this week multiple times called him Bubble Corey Seager, which from even though last year wasn't technically a bubble, but. Right. He's hitting as well as he did in Texas last year during the playoffs. And he's just, for like a month, has just been tearing the cover off the ball. And what a treat it has been to have him healthy. And then he and Trey Turner, like, batting in, like, the top three of the lineup, like, down the stretch has really driven the offense quite a bit. So, yeah, it's a it's something to watch. That's sort of... I think a high point going into the playoffs for them.
Well, we're going to look ahead to the playoffs after the break, but I think you have a trivia question for me to take us to the break.
Yep. Okay. So Trey Turner, you know, he was activated about a week after the Dodgers trade for him after the trade deadline because he was on the COVID IL, but he coincided roughly with I do a post. Three times a season, breaking the season down in 54 game chunks because it sometimes it's nice to see how things sort of play out over the years, over the season. The Dodgers this year, you know, going into the season, everyone's talking about like, like they were very, like, just about every prognostication or like betting line had them well over 100 wins. It ended up being, hey, like, look, that's right. But, like, this is how you can sort of view a season as a disappointment. First 54 games, they were 32-22. The second 54 games, they were 32-22. So that's a 96-win pace. Imagine being, like, a 96-win caliber team and everyone going, what's wrong? Like, you know, like, that's kind of crazy. But in the final 54 games with healthy Seager, Trey Turner, Max Scherzer at his peak, Walker Buehler and Julio Urias, both pitching very well. They were 42-12 in the last 54 games. I made a joking post. This is not 54 games, but a couple weeks back, I said, it's going to be wild when someone to tell one of the teams, look, sorry, you won 35 out of your last 50 games, but you didn't win the National League West. The Dodgers ended up winning 39 of their last 50 games, and they did not win the National League West. So, but back to the 54 game thing. So 42-12 for a final 54 games on the schedule. Where would you say since 1901
mm-hmm.
In Major League Baseball?
Oh,
this is American and National League only, actually. Apologies to the Negro Leagues, which is technically counted as Major League, but some of the scheduling is a little rough, at least record-keeping wise, so it's hard to sort of delineate. But I'm going to make this very simple. Yeah. I'll give you two outs here. First question, when is the last time someone finished better than 42-12 over the last 54 games? And since 1901, what place would you think that record is in terms of the best 54-game stretches since 1901?
Okay, I will take stabs at that after this. You're asking me to kind of contextualizely guess and seem really smart on how the Dodgers' last 54 games of the season work. So we'll start with the first question you asked me. When was the last time a team finished as good or better?
I will accept both.
Okay. Thinking. Because that really good Dodger stretch was near the end of the season, but it's not the end of the season because they tanked in August. Let's say 1987. I don't know.
Okay, so I was looking here. The 1983 White Sox finished 41-13, but that was slightly worse. What about the other part? Do you think they place?
I randomly wrote down fifth.
You were right.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. Tied for fifth with the 2002 A's, 42-12. So the last one that was better was actually very recent. 2017 Cleveland. They won 22 in a row down the stretch. They were 43-11. The other teams that were better, the 1906 Cubs, who lost the World Series to the Hitless Wonders. But I think that Cubs team, I believe, was 116-36, which is insane. but they finished 47-7 down the stretch. And then you have the 1942 Cardinals. They finished 44-10. That was a year where – so the Dodgers won their first pennant in 21 years in 1941. They won 100 games. Then they turn around and win 104 games in 1942. And then – but because the Cardinals finished 44-10, they finished with 106 wins. Very similar to this year, in fact, except for the Brooklyn didn't have a fallback wild card to go to the playoffs. But – then also the 2001 A's finished 44-10, only I believe to finish 15 games behind the Mariners in the standings because they won 116 games. So yeah, I was shocked by how good that finish was and how like just generally last year obviously was only a 60 game season. But the last 54 games for the Dodgers were 39-15. That's their second best 54 game finish. I'm looking here. It looks like the 1953 team, which is usually the gold standard for either run differential in franchise history or like wins before this recent stretch, they were 39-15 in the last 54. 1924 Dodgers, who were not terribly good. They ended up winning 92 games. I mean, so that's good. They finished in second, but like, that was generally not a good era for them, or it was about to be. They finished 39-15. I'm trying to see. I don't see any other recent Dodger teams. I guess, 2019. So we're basically living in the golden era of strong finishes. They were 37-17. Yeah, like, look at the last, the last 5 years. Is the best 5-year winning percentage in Dodgers history. They won 104 games in 2017. They won 106 games in 2019 and 2021. Last year they had the highest winning percentage in like forever, but it was obviously only a 60 game season. But their winning percentage is .636 over the last 5 years. The 51-55 Brooklyn teams was .633. So yeah, this is kind of the golden era for the Dodgers right now. And that's, we've sort of seen it in how they played.
All right. So let's move ahead. Let's look ahead at this one game. Like last time it came 163 doesn't feel the same because you had the backdoor option. And
yes.
But that's as close as we've really come other than game sevens, I guess, and game fives. This very do or die mentality. There's a lot of, I don't know right what the right word is, but indignation that the Dodgers, having won so much, have to play this game. But guess what? They do. So time to just, you know, you however many wins more you had, Dodgers are the better team. Go win.
Yeah, I think
Daniel Brim had a tweet like that.
Right. Like, him. Yeah. I think it's their first win or go home single game. Not counting like a game five or a game seven, obviously, but like since the 1980 one game tiebreaker against the Astros, where going into the final weekend at Dodger Stadium, the Dodgers were down three games with three to play. They swept the Astros to get a tiebreaker game at home, which was where that series was, and then they lost on Monday. So yeah, so that was the last one and done, I believe, for the Dodgers. So. Yeah, it's obviously like since the wild card game started in 2012, the Dodgers narrowly missed the postseason that year, but then they won the next eight NL West titles. So like they have not been exposed to the wild card game, which is both like kind of amazing to watch, but also gut wrenching and terrifying. Just generally, because it's a one game playoff and anything can happen in one game. That said, the Dodgers are very clearly better than the Cardinals. Even the looking like they were invincible Cardinals for much of the last month. But yeah, so like I think people are talking themselves into knots about how the Dodgers are going to lose only because it's just something to like. Whine about, for lack of a better term, but the Dodgers are very clearly better than the Cardinals, and they should win the game. Doesn't mean they will, but like, there's very good reason to expect them to win Wednesday, which would set up the first ever Dodgers Giants postseason series. We'll obviously have another episode talking about that if that happens. We'll also have another episode talking about how it's not happening, perhaps, depending on how Wednesday goes. But, you know, the Dodgers are in, like, a very good spot, I think, going into Wednesday. They're at home. They have Max Scherzer on the mound. Now, his last two starts weren't very good. Like, he had the like a bad start at Coors, like, similar to Kershaw. Like, it was Coors. But then, against the Padres in the 1+4 game, he allowed 11 hits. Was getting hit around a little bit, but he was like invincible. Like maybe somewhere in between, you know, like he still had a very good overall year. He's still Max Scherzer. Adam Wainwright, who's been just had an amazing season, especially at age 40. The Cardinals have a terrific defense. They're going to be formidable. But yeah, I think the Dodgers should be favored. Now the Cardinals, won 17 straight in September, which is hard to do. The Dodgers and Cardinals met four games at Busch Stadium in September, right before the winning streak for the Cardinals. Max Scherzer dominated in the opener in that series. He struck out 13 in eight innings, gave up one unearned run. Wainwright pitched into the ninth in the third game of the series. And won his start, so like it's going to be exciting. They split the four games. Then after the series, the Cardinals finished the year 19-4. So like, yeah, they've been playing excellently. Like the excellent defense. They have the old divisional foes, Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt. So there's going to be sort of that factor. Their outfield defense, especially, is excellent. And it's going to be exciting. Like, it should be a fun game, but like, I think that the Dodgers are home. Their offense is playing well. I think they're in a good spot, but you know, it's one game, anything can happen. So it very well, you know, who knows, but like, yeah, it's one of those things, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. we've talked a lot about how I hate playoff baseball, and that's why I, you know, at times wasn't watching some of the last week just because I got it too stressful. It's too stressful. So a one game playoff is just
The other thing is, like, in a series, like in a postseason series, you can sort of ease your way into it, in a way. Whereas in the one game, like, you're thrown into the deep end, and it's just screaming from the top, like like right away. So, like, it's very weird. But yeah, like, it's, you know, I always joke, like, October is like a huge month for Pepto Bismol. It just, you know, stomachs get in knots. It's very stressful, and the wild card game is, it's great to watch when you have no interest in it at all, because it's just like, look at these teams suffering for our amusement. But now it's like, oh crap!
Now that we're sowing, this sucks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, reaping and sowing. Exactly. So yeah, it's gonna be exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
You know, Dodgers won the World Series last year, so I swore when they would do that, I would give up my no longer watching and only paying attention. So I'll be watching, but I'll probably be suffering.
Yeah. What was it? That's the Christmas Vacation line. It's the holidays, and we're all in misery.
Yeah. Well, let's end on a high note, a happy note, because it's time for
With Gene and Craig. We love them.
I have a question for Craig Minami, friend of yours, friend of mine, friend of the show.
Friend of everyone.
Really? Except for you know who. No.
That's right.
I should note that, you know, we started this podcast in 1922.
That's right.
When we were in Brooklyn.
Vince
Scully
has
nothing on us. Like,
yep.
But no, when we started off, we were very seat of the pants. We did not have show notes, like, at all. Like, I would, like, write three things down which we wanted to talk about, and that was it. And now for the last 2 years, I'm spoiled because you write these wonderful show notes, send them off, and I know exactly what to say. And you did not do that today.
You're in scramble mode. Speaking of that, you mentioned Vince Scully. It made me think.
I did.
Had I written show notes, I would have mentioned, which I just forgot about, Jaime Herrin announced that next year is going to be his final year.
We talked about that last week.
We did?
We did.
Well, all right. Yeah. Wait, that was, we talked about
that last week. I think he had, like, just announced it, but maybe the conference hadn't taken place yet. So.
All right. So apologies, but you know what? It's good news. Well, like, he gets two episodes worth of mentions for that. That's great.
And I'm glad.
A very nice man.
Similar event that will have a nice year to really commemorate that. I'm looking forward to that. First question. Game 2 of the 2009 NLDS is one of the most memorable playoff games at Dodger Stadium. Can Eric answer some questions about that game? You ready?
I could try,
Who was the winning pitcher?
Oh God. 2009. I don't even remember if he was on the team after 2008, but I'm gonna take a stab and say Corey Wade.
Incorrect. So just to contextualize, I'm remembering correctly. This is an afternoon game with the is this the Matt Holliday game?
Yeah. Okay. Matt Holliday taking a line, James Loney soft liner off the nuts. Yeah.
Would you like another guess at the
sure. Let's go with let's just go Jonathan Broxton.
Close. He did pitch in the game, but the winning pitcher was George Sherrill.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Good. Go ahead.
Which Dodger homered in the game?
Oh. Let's go with a total guess here again. Ronnie Belliard.
Incorrect. It is Andre Ethier.
Nice. All right.
Who were the starting pitchers in the game?
So, if I remember right, 09. I think Kershaw started game one, which was like a big deal. And then, so that would have made game two because Vicente Padilla pitched game three with various buttons unbuttoned. And let's go Chad Billingsley.
Clayton Kershaw started for the Dodgers. Randy Wolf started game one.
Good Lord.
Yeah, okay, right?
Did Kershaw start game one of the LCS then? I don't remember what happened. Yeah, who knows?
I'll see if I can find that out for you. Who started for the Cardinals?
Oh, so I think it was Adam Wainwright.
You are correct.
I remember he was the one complaining about the white towels that the Dodgers fans had as a giveaway that they distracted.
They need to bring them back.
Exactly.
Little cheat here. Two inducted Baseball Hall of Fame players played in that series. Can Eric name them? Note, only one played in game two.
So I saw this question. The very little show prep I did glance at this part of Craig's questions. The first one that immediately came to mind was Jim Thome.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one I am having a hard time coming up with. I will think, just trying to think here. John Smoltz.
You are correct. Good job.
Yeah. I was thinking along the lines of Larry Walker, but I think he was already retired by then because I seem to remember it took him like all 10 of his seasons or something, or maybe nine to get into the Hall, and that would have like made him retire earlier than this. So that's what was screwing me up.
Okay. I've got a, I'm parsing this a little bit, but, the only hit by pitch in the game was Jim Thome took it. And nice. Clayton Kershaw's only walk in the game was intentional to one Albert Pujols.
Whoa.
And, Clayton Kershaw did start game one of the NLCS, by the way.
Okay. That was that must have been in my head.
All right. The next question. Although it will be framed as the hot Cardinal team playing the Dodgers, in fact, the Dodgers went 18-3 to finish the season. While Fangraphs writer Jay Jaffe reminds us that how you play in September doesn't automatically translate to winning in October, do you think the Dodgers can continue the recent play and keep whatever momentum they have into play this Wednesday and hopefully in the NLDS?
Look, if Trey Turner keeps hitting grand slams, they're going to win. Like, he hit grand slam on Friday. He hit a grand slam on Sunday. Those broke the Dodgers franchise record for grand slams in a season with 11. They hit 10 in 2004. And so Turner is the ninth different Dodger to hit a grand slam this year. Gavin Lux also had two. I just like the way the offense is playing. I think Max Scherzer is very, very good. It's less about momentum, more about the Dodgers they won 106 games. The Cardinals won 90. And like Craig said, even down the stretch, I mentioned, the Cardinals were 19-4 after that series, and the Dodgers, like he mentioned, were 18-3 down the stretch. So it's like, yeah, they're good. Like, I think, and they're at home. So, like, I do think they're going to win. But, yeah, like, it's a one-game playoff, so things happen. Like, the fact that they're at home, they're a better team. Anything in baseball is, like I think 60-40 is, like, as good as you can hope for going in. You know, maybe a little higher depending on the matchup, but, like, that's kind of where that. So it's hard to sometimes accept that there's like a 40% chance you're going to lose, but there is, you know, like it's just, yeah, exactly. So sorry to Jacob's,
psyche.
Intestinal fortitude.
Trey Turner became the first Dodger to win a batting title since Dodger Stadium was a newly opened stadium. I'm trying to think of a comparable Dodger, and none came to mind. Do you like him in the three spot? And given what happened to Muncy, how much will the Dodgers rely on that top three of Betts, Seager, and Trey going forward?
So I was thinking about this. I didn't ask Craig, but I wonder what he meant by did. So I read that in my head at first as comparable, meaning like great player, great season they acquired mid-season, or just style of play. It's probably style of play.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I interpreted that.
Yeah. Because, yeah, Turner was excellent. So I was reading this. So I was going through some stats. I mentioned the final 54 games post, which I was up very late last night writing. And Turner's stats with the Dodgers are very good. He hit 10 home runs. He had 11 steals. I was surprised by this. He had, with the Dodgers, in that final third of the season, I believe he played 52 games. He had 17 doubles. Like, that's a the Dodgers have never had a 50 double player. At least I can't remember if Johnny Frederick, I believe, had that in Brooklyn. But since moving to LA, they've never had a 50 double player, and he's basically been on a 50 double pace since joining the Dodgers. So, yeah, it's. He has been really, really good. Now, it's weird because, you know, he has the power. His season ended with 28 homers and 32 steals overall. But, like, he's also, like, the fastest player I can remember them having. Like, the fastest, like, Terrence Gore might have been faster, but, like, you know, he's a very specialized type player. I'm having a hard time coming up with someone like that they've had. Is it too much to say like peak Davey Lopes? Because he had the 1 year with 28 home runs in 1979, and he was an excellent base dealer. Probably not as good defensively as Trey Turner. Like Trey Turner, like a natural shortstop. Davey Lopes, fast enough to play in center. Moved to second base was okay. Maybe it's Davey Lopes, honestly. Like, yeah, it is hard finding a comp for that sort of skill set. But he's very unique.
This is a good example, I think, of how similarity score is cute, but sometimes doesn't work. Do you know who his number one similar batter is? I'll give you a hint. He bats right before the similar player bats right before him. It's Corey Seager.
Wow. Nice.
It's interesting because, you know, shortstop, very good hitters. And, you know, and it does say similar batters, not necessarily similar players.
Both will be signing very lucrative contracts within, I would say, 12 months of each other, if not possibly days of each other.
Yeah, both of the Dodgers. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's wild.
I can't see it not happening. I lost the questions. You ready for the next question once I do find it?
Sure.
James Bond and Mission Impossible movies are famous for their opening scenes to kickstart the action. Are you a fan? And while Daniel Craig and Tom Cruise are big stars, how important are they to those franchises?
I like the cold open in a movie. In SNL, in a lot of stuff. I would not say I'm a James Bond head, or whatever you call that. But like I think I've seen just about every Bond movie. Daniel Craig has been, I think, excellent in the Bond movies. I'm not gonna go. I don't know when I'll see No Time to Die, but I'll see it at some point. And yeah, it's been generally good. Like I like that. Mission Impossible. I was like probably slow to that. Like that's been going on for a while. Like it's like every few years, like they come back to it, you know. But it's like basically Tom Cruise being Tom Cruise, and that's also wildly entertaining. Like you know. It's an absurd sort of. There's usually like absurd circumstances, but like they pull it off, and it's, I like it. It's been generally like very good. So like, yeah, as long as they keep making those movies at like same style, I will probably keep watching them. They're fun to watch. The funny part is, as you were asking that question, I was not expecting the abrupt turn in the non-baseball. And you said James, and in my head, I was expecting you to say Loney right away. But you said Bond, and it threw me off. So, yeah.
Celebrity softball or softball game MVP, James Loney.
What? I don't remember this.
You don't? Oh man, now I have to look this up. It was one of the celebrity games at Dodger Stadium.
Ah, okay.
He came back and hit like, got like 9 RBIs. I'll look it up for you. I was a very big James Bond fan and have sort of died off on that now. But you know, in the like middle school, I'm very into it. Probably largely fueled by the GoldenEye video game, but. Still got really into all the older ones and stuff like that, but haven't really kept up on a lot of the new
ones.
That
was, I believe, Famke Janssen, and that one was Zanya on the top, mm-hmm. And like, so they have like the over the top names of characters, and obviously Austin Powers spoofed it quite well. But yeah, that was pretty good.
Googling James Loney's celebrity softball game, just as I thought I would be when I started my day. One of those commercials that I always remember is the one where the guy joins his friends at the restaurant while they are ordering and says something like, "I'll have the biggest steak you have and a Heineken." It seemed like such an adult thing to do. Anyways, that's what adults do. Anyway, my question this week is about steak. We always get hungry after this, and this is going to cost us a pretty penny.
Yeah.
Do you prefer a certain cut? Was your first experience at a steakhouse a sizzler? And if so, how high in your favorites there would be a toast be, if at all? In this, in the last several years, when I prepare steak, I always let it rest and then served it sliced, starting doing that when I buy steaks at Costco for gathering. Do you like to do that, or do you prefer to get your own steak and eat it that way?
Great question. Sizzler is an all-time restaurant for me. I will always have nostalgia for Sizzler because it was very heavily in the birthday special occasion dinner rotation for me growing up. I was a steak and all you can eat shrimp guy from like an early age, like probably way too early, shockingly early. More for the shrimp was the big thing, but the steak was good. Sizzler steak, just to be clear, it's not very good, like, you know, just generally, but it's nostalgic and I will still order it. During the pandemic when, you know, there was a lot of like delivery type things, Sizzler had like a takeout. They had some deals going and I went there. The nostalgia hit pretty hard at some point, and I probably ate there twice in like a month. And it hit all the spots. Like it delivered exactly what I wanted it to deliver. And I think generally at home, I very rarely cook like steak at home. That's more something like I will get going out, but I don't really get it that often going out. I think for my birthday this last year, I was just at home, but I did. I got like Outback, which is, I would say they're generally like, I think better than Sizzler, like for like a chain restaurant.
High bar.
That was pretty good. Yeah, you're right. Exactly. Favorite cut. I think it's probably filet. I know people like ribeye a lot and it's probably a little more flavorful. Maybe. I always tended toward the filet if that was an option, even though it was obviously more expensive, and it's not like I ate this a lot growing up. You know, that was a very rare thing. Well, not rare,
only once a week.
My mom used to get stuff well done, which is how I thought meat was prepared growing up. And then around in college, I realized that there were other ways to prepare meat, which were way better. And so, yeah, I'm a medium rare guy now, but generally I will slice the steak if it's, I'm more likely to do that for like a carne asada, which is generally a thinner cut and it's obviously not the same, but like I'm more likely to slice it for that. If I cook a steak at home, I will probably just cook it and then, you know, cut it as I'm eating it. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't make it often enough to like have a style, but yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
If I'm serving it for other people, I'll go through the whole sauna dance of rest and all that. But if it's just sure. me, I'm just going to probably tear into it because I'm hungry.
In fact, you don't even have a knife. You just
yeah,
stick
just,
a fork into it and
no,
eat it
no,
from
no,
the
just
fork.
Hand, just grab
oh,
it.
Oh, nice. Hunk yeah,
on me.
Right.
Ribeye, as you allude to, as I am one of those people, by far my favorite cut. I don't get it all that often, but if I'm at a restaurant I trust and the ribeye is especially calling me, it's a really nice treat. There's a restaurant here in Lawrence, 715, that has a two-person ribeye. I don't know how big it is, but it's huge. And Melissa and I split that on our anniversary Ooh. Dinner, and it was delicious.
Is 715 named, does it have any connection at all to Hank Aaron?
It does not. It's the address of the restaurant.
Kenley Jansen style of naming.
Now I'm going to stop talking about steak because I'm going to get really hungry, and I do not have steak in this house, so I can't yes. afford it.
Same. No, exactly. I'm not going to go out and get steak.
DoorDash or ribeye.
if I got steak right now, it would be like Chipotle, you know, mm-hmm, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's not the same. That was not the intent of the question. I don't
yeah,
think.
Not at all.
Was that the last? See, this is how prepared we are. Was that the last question from Craig?
It was about food. It was.
Of course, we're ending on food. So, damn it, Craig, we're ending on steak. All right. Well, look, everyone, we got 2 days till the wild card game, possibly one, depending on when you're listening to this. But however you watch the wild card game, cook a steak, enjoy it while you're watching Dodgers Cardinals, and we will talk to you later this week, either about the end of the Dodgers season or previewing a series that might kill us all.
Ooh.
Thanks for listening, everybody.